Turkey, Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Rollin', 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 keep them tea-hotties rollin', keep the... Never mind. Hey, it's Monday. Yeah. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go if you want to jump into the chat room for this, the 7th day of March, 2016. Yes, this program is live. This program is live Monday through Friday, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I take less time off than just about any other progressive broadcaster out there. Mm-hmm. Time off? No, I get sick once in a while, but, you know, I persisted through being pretty damn miserable last week. And hopefully that whatever it was, event is finally run its course. The sneezing seems to have slowed to about, you know, 30 per hour now. Can't guarantee there won't be any interruptions, but hopefully not nearly as many. Yes. Run over to headonradionetwork.com, click on chat room, jump right in, pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and you will be part of the merriment, the madcap, zany extravaganza, real time. That is the Horn chat room during the live portion of the program. Good evening to Jug of Punch and Labor Man, and to our longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderators, Lottie and Sparky. Mm-hmm. Thanks very kindly to Tom over at FYINation.com, where I presume I'm getting preempted because of the Fox Town Hall this evening. I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. But thanks for letting me know I'm a rolling. Yes, indeed. Hey, look, the microphone just got all better. It'll come. It comes in, it goes out. It's like the tides. Hi. I'm Bob Kincaid. Yes, indeed. It is Moran Monday on the Horn. And before we go any further, let me remind everyone that this here is what we like to call a listener-supported broadcast operation. We are not a great big capitalist enterprise. If we were, we'd be trying to raise a lot more than any $200 an evening, but we got about $1,000 in bills to pay this week, being as how we're kind of, second week of March, second full week of March, and so that means we need to do our fundraising each and every night. One at 200 this evening, two at 100, four at 50. The weekend's going to do 8 at 25, 16 at 12, 50, 32 at 6 and a quarter, 64 at $3.13, because we round up around here because we've got a secret open carry Happy Trails Roundup Society. It's not a trying to figure out the mic problem. Nope, that's not what it is. When with the barest tap of the mix desk, I can go from this to the more muted version. No, it's inside the board, believe you me. And, you know, maybe one of these days we'll get a new one. It sure would be nice. But for now, we'll just kind of get along as best we can. Among other things, I think we've kind of lost the, the compression and noise gate function here because I can hear the air conditioner behind me. That's right, the air conditioner. Went to bed last night, it was winter. Got up this morning, it was summer. And right now, as I speak, you know, sun's still out because spring is on its way. And here inside the fabulous Horn Kincaid Mansion Studios, it is 71 degrees. Yes, indeed. I'm not getting preempted over at FYINation.com for the town hall. Yes, apparently, Bernie and Hillary. Bernie had already said, "Yeah, I'll participate." And then after saying, "Hell no," Hillary finally realized that it might be a good idea. Might be, maybe, just sort of, kind of. And I trust. But anyway, the PayPal interface is over at headonradionetwork.com under the tab Contribute. There's some fields to fill out there. Your name, your address, that kind of thing. You know, you choose an amount and whatnot. And that field there that wants to know what it is that you do for Captain Steubing on the Love Boat, you can leave those blank and just get to the next screen. That's where you make your PayPal, your Visa, MasterCard, Discover, whatever choices. That's how that happens. But that's also how we keep this all going, how we keep this on the air. And hopefully, you know, from month to month to month to month. So thank you very, very kindly, one and all, as we begin. I already did that, Tim. Tim says, "Who are you?" Yeah, I did that. Just because you didn't hear it didn't mean I didn't. And a reminder, fundraising-wise, we're still trying to get to the point where we have 100 subscribers. Right now, we have I don't know, but it's nowhere near 100. Ultimately, as Joan suggested out in Taliban, Indiana, it would be nice if we could get to 400 $10 a month subscribers. But let's get to 100 first. And if you want to, over there at that interface I was talking about, you just check that box. And, you know, whatever amount you choose. It is all very, very helpful. If you prefer to use the U.S. Postal Service, well, you can always send something to our little old mailbox that we apparently share in the same building with the Klan. Yeah, the checks and money orders, and now that we know that the Klan's there, no, really, checks and money orders made payable to the Horn, please. The Klan's a dishonest terrorist organization, and so consequently, you know, right. So if you, checks and money orders made payable to the Horn, to the Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB, 318 Beckley, Beckley, WV, 25801. And if you want to do it that way, just send me a note, and that way I can tell Boss Man Wayne to leave the spider-proof gloves in the truck when he reaches into the echo chamber. I don't know. Then again, I'm thinking now that we know what we know about the Klan being at our little location, maybe it's best to always take a baseball bat. Never know when you're going to run into the, you know, Klan, filthy pigs. Yeah, right, Tim, right. Made payable to the Horn, not to the Klan. So it is, yep, okay, and I just kind of thumped the mixer and it's back. It is Moran Monday on the Horn, and we have Morans. We have multiple Morans. But before we jump into the general cataloging of Morans, just a couple of observations on last night's Democratic pageant in Flint. One, if, and it's interesting how the for-profit media who have the approximate analytical powers of sphagnum peat moss. It just sort of blew past this. But if you were undecided, and if you are a life form on this planet that is A, sentient, and B, water-based, that is, you drink it and you use it, if you were undecided going into last night's debate, I would think that you would probably have had your you would have had your decision made or had your choice pretty clearly delineated by the end of the pageant. And not because of how many times Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton interrupted Senator Sanders. She's very good at that. No. Because really nobody's out there talking about this particular exchange. There was a very simple, straightforward question put out there, namely, and to wit, what do you think? Do you support fracking? And you know what? It was one of the least interrupted segments of the entire debate. Donald Trump wasn't on that stage last night, but his tactics damn sure were. And Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton deployed them with real verve. She tap danced all over the agreed upon rules of the engagement and felt free just to jump in and interrupt the old white Jewish guy anytime she felt like it. Now, on the other hand, for the most part, Senator Sanders, he behaved in a fashion that most of us could recognize. When he wished to speak or wished to make a response, he raised his hand, just like we've all been taught since kindergarten. But we all know there was always that one kid in kindergarten who never got it, who always just blurted, "I want to talk." And that's a Trump tactic. If somebody starts scoring points against you, interrupt. Try to break the chain of thought. It's also an old lawyer tactic. I'll bet Billable Rick recognized it. I'll bet our buddy Steve in New York recognized it. I think I recall that our pal Darlene in Connecticut had some legal training. I'll bet she recognized it. I recognized it. And so, sir, isn't it true that you committed the murder on the 29th day? I object! Just to make sure that the jury doesn't get the whole... Because, see, we're all the jury. But it didn't. I don't know how it played. I do. I saw, for instance, the Hillary House organ, Blue Nation Review, which now has all the credibility of a dead skunk in the middle of the road. I noticed that they immediately put out a hit piece, screaming about how women don't appreciate Bernie telling Hillary that he's talking, because, see, that's how bad it got. It got so bad. Clinton's constant interruptions, hey, microphone's back, got so bad that eventually he said, "Excuse me, I'm talking." Because civility was right on out the window and way on down the road last night. And it wasn't an accident. That was planned. That was clearly just a matter of taking a page out of the Drumpf playbook to prove that she could theoretically do it if she's the nominee and has to go up against him, that she can get down there and wallow right down there with him. you know, she's tough. But there wasn't much in the way of interruption when it came to the fracking question. Do you support fracking? No, I do not have the audio of it here, but it's kind of scorched into my memory in a way. Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton's answer was, well, if a state wants fracking, and if there are regulatory practices in place, and if the fracking companies will disclose to us what's in their heretofore undisclosed proprietary fracking fluid recipe, and if they're and if, then yeah, if the state wants it, well, I have no objection. Blah. It was about as triangulated and nuanced an answer as Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton has ever given. I can't imagine that her own partisans were like, great answer. Mm-mm. And then, and because the answer was so short, she didn't get a chance to interrupt. Bernie simply said, no, I don't support fracking. And the hall erupted in applause because, see, poisoned water matters. You know, among us sentient water-based life forms. I mean, we are, as human beings, aren't we? Back with James Cameron's movie The Abyss eons ago. And you know what? I love that movie. I do. Unfortunately, most of the traveling that I do around the country, I have to do without having my beloved spouse by my side. And so there's a scene in The Abyss where Virgil, played by Ed Harris, is descending into the abyss. And he's got this little keypad on his wrist. And he just types out one letter at a time. Love, E-L-O-V-E, Y-O-U-W-I-F-E. And so every time that I'm sitting out on the tarmac waiting for the plane to take off, and right before they tell us to all shut our devices down, I type to Agnes, L-O-V-E, send, Y-O-U, send, W-I-F-E, send. And, well, that really isn't part of the story now, is it? No, the point I was going to make is that what James Cameron does, I think, quite brilliantly in that film is that he creates a metaphor for humanity in the what do you mean is the horn down? No, the horn's going fine, Tim. Don't scare me like that. James Cameron creates a metaphor for humanity in the water creatures. Yeah, Virgil's his name, Marty. His nickname is Bud, but his name's Virgil. But James Cameron creates this metaphor of humanity out of these creatures who are able to shape-shift within water. And it works. And one of our problems, or at least the problem that apparently afflicts a whole lot of humanity, especially a whole lot of humanity that lives surrounded by dollar signs and numbers with lots of zeros behind a one or a two or whatever. Oh, thank you, Robert Art in Australia, saying loud and clear in Oz. I appreciate that. Lottie says they were called hydro angels. Okay, it works. They were angelic. But people with tons and tons and tons of money don't seem to appreciate that they're made of the same stuff the rest of us are. Wealth does not convey a different chemical composition to our essence, to our being. And we all are water-based life forms. Dehydration, that's not a synonym for thirst. That's a word that means we stop being our essential human selves. Now, for those of us who acknowledge science, we know that we came from the water. We know that all life began in what is colloquially referred to as the primordial soup. I like to think of it as a sort of early version of clam chowder. But we came from the water. And we can't get away from our water-basedness. Yeah, we get up and we walk around on land, and we pretend that we're solid things. But we can become pretty insubstantial pretty quick. If you reduce us to our solid state, we're not worth much. And people, like, say, people in Appalachia who live near mountaintop removal, we've known this lesson perhaps a little longer than people who have recently, in the last 10 years or so, begun to be fracked. Oh, goody, it's motorcycle evening outside the Horn Studios. Gonna put a broom handle in that boy's spokes one of these days. No, I'm not. Lottie's saying, thank you, Horta. For first obligatory Star Trek reference of the evening. Pain! Remember when Spock did the Vulcan mind meld? Yes. The Horta was hurt by all the drilling and the blasting. Yeah, imagine that. But we in Appalachia are sensitive to it because we've been getting poisoned for maybe a little bit longer than other folks have. And in many instances, up various and sundry hollers here in Appalachia, we live a more primitive lifestyle. Because we don't have a lot of us. Didn't used to have highfalutin, what we refer to as city water systems, where we were at the mercy of a for-profit entity who periodically took a little stroll over to the Public Service Commission and says, hey, can we gouge them some more? I mean, yeah, a couple of years ago we let 300,000 of them get poisoned and everything, but you know, y'all thankfully shut that West Virginia government had a way of shutting that kind of thing down. And we really would. We'd like to squeeze some more money out of the proles. No, we're not going to improve services or anything. We're just going to give all the money to the shareholders. Because Merca. The greatest country in the world on earth to now, today, forever, in the universe of all time. Amen. Hallelujah. In God we trust, post no bills, use no hooks, and this end up.
Right. We don't, I don't think we realize just how water-based we are. But up the hollers, we do, because up the hollers, we live the way that our ancestors lived. And by ancestors, I mean way before we ever crossed the Atlantic. Or by ancestors, I mean when we were wandering around the freaking steppes of the Caucasus, fighting with the buzzards for what the wolves didn't want. Dig a hole in the ground until some water comes a-bubbling up. And because of what the coal industry has done to Appalachia, we have learned the hard way. We have learned by sacrificing our water-based selves on the altar of holy profit, profit. And it's not a pretty picture. It's a picture of cancer clusters and heart disease and pulmonary disease and rotten ovaries and breast cancer and tears and hands held in hospital rooms amongst things that beeped slower and slower until they beeped no more or else simply went beep. And we've pursued our learning curve in funeral homes and at gravesides. Yeah. And this might come as a surprise. I mean, I know there's just oodles of stories out there. They've been proliferating quite a lot lately, all over the place. Well-meaning people writing stories about how King Coal is done in Appalachia. Hallelujah, coal's on the way out. We won't be using coal. And even though there's statistical evidence out there that says we're not just going to burn coal, we're going to burn more coal on this planet in the next 15, 20 years, then we're burning now. Oh, but coal's on the way out, right? Maybe almost as if, you know, if we say it enough, it'll become true. Well, the big lie theory doesn't work in hydrocarbons, apparently. And with the layoff notices and whatnot that have been out there that are afflicting West Virginia, Eastern Kentucky, that kind of thing. It might be easy to believe. And, of course, it's particularly easy to believe if you are, say, you know, one of the people who has been making his or her living off of the liquidation of West Virginia and its people. And suddenly you're not making the money anymore. But they're still here. The blasting is still going on. The water's still being poisoned. The air is still being fouled. And people are still breathing and drinking and bathing in all of the filth that the coal industry foists upon us in the name of what they worship at the altar of holy profit, profit. Bear witness, please. A story from March the 4th in the Beckley Fish Wrap. A Wyoming County judge, this is Sarah Plummer writing it for the Beckley Register Herald. A Wyoming County judge will force the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection to require a Patriot Coal subsidiary to provide emergency and permanent water replacement for 27 families whose well water has been contaminated by mining activities. I'll try not to be too dull and monotonous as I read through this, because I generally don't read whole stories or anything, but I think this one deserves it in light of, well, a broader picture. Circuit Court Judge Warren R. McGraw issued an order Wednesday last stating expert testimony showed a coal slurry impoundment operated by Eastern Associated Coal LLC at its Copperston No. 4 mine contaminated well water for families living downstream of the ironically named Clear Fork Creek in the ironically named Holler community of Clear Fork. Clear Fork Creek and Clear Fork are obviously no longer clear. And I should probably point out that when the Beckley Register Herald Fish Wrap uses an Orwellian term like coal slurry impoundment, what we're talking about is a sea of toxic waste. Of course, y'all probably already know about that, because it's not like the first time I've talked about these things. But it might be a good time to remind folks that these seas exist in man-made impoundments, and the impoundments themselves are made out of dirt and rock. And they don't. And it's not like a modern landfill that has a liner in it to keep things from leaching into groundwater and whatnot, and ultimately getting into aquifers. Oh, hell no! No. 1,000 times no. This poison just sits there, and it leaches through the ground, down into the aquifer, and hey, your well gets poisoned. McGraw has ordered the DEP to require Eastern to provide emergency water in 5-gallon jugs within 24 hours and temporary water in 1,500-gallon tanks within 72 hours. I might note that Warren McGraw is one of the last of the great judges that once spoke on behalf of the people abused by coal companies in this state. Did you get that? He told the Department of Environmental Protection to insist that Eastern Coal provide emergency water in 5-gallon jugs within 24 hours and temporary water in 1,500-gallon tanks within 72. The order further requires the coal company to provide temporary water until a permanent replacement can be made. Now let's take a moment and examine that. A permanent replacement. That means adding another community onto another public service district for city water. Now those 27 families have never had a water bill. Now, they most likely pay some portion of their electricity bill for the electricity that it takes to run the pump that's in the well to bring the water up from the well into the house. And somewhere along the way, they've also paid for for the pump and for a pressure tank. Those are fixed costs. And you don't pay them very often. Except for the electricity bill, you pay that every month. But they've never had a water bill. They've never had to give a damn when West Virginia American Water Company sashays down to their creatures at the Public Service Commission and says, "We want more money out of the idiots. We want it. Give us more money. We want more money to give to our shareholders."
Well, okay, yes, sir, yes, sir, yes, sir. Please don't get angry. No, please. We'll make them give you more money. Really,
50% more.
Okay, well, you sure that'll be all right? We could do 75.
They've never had to deal with that. But since the goddamn coal industry is more important than life-giving water for water-based life forms in this state, these folks are eventually going to have a water bill. Every drink will inure to the benefit of some West Virginia American Water shareholder. Every dish washed will inure to the benefit of some shareholder of American Water. Every piece of clothing, every sock, every pair of pants run through the washing machine will mean a little bit better money for the shareholders of American Water, who most likely don't live any fucking where near Appalachia. Every flush of the toilet means more money for the shareholders of American Water, whose subsidiary, West Virginia American Water, left their goddamned intakes open while tens, who knows, of thousands of gallons of poison rushed into the system. Yeah. Murka. Because profit over people. So that's what it means when it says until a permanent replacement can be made. Because, see, you can't replace a well. You can't just move over 5 feet and drill into a pocket of water made by a different set of little Keebler elves under the ground. It really is a great example of we're all in this together. Except we're not. Because the boys who make the big money from whatever it is that Eastern Associated Coal does don't live anywhere near Wyoming County, West Virginia. And they never have to worry about whether or not little Johnny or little Susie needs to have a fundamental understanding of basic chemistry at the age of 5 in order to brush their fucking teeth. Oh, hell no. Never. The story continues. 27 families filed this litigation after making complaints to the DEP under the Surface Coal Mine Reclamation Act. SMACRA. DEP water sampling at that time, between 2011 and 2013, indicated their water had been contaminated. Wait for it. Wait for it. Wait for it. But the investigation was closed. I'll take a moment here, 6:38 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, while you kick furniture and swear. Sorry about not issuing the hockey puck warning. I forgot that part. Until the investigation was closed. Got that? They found out that the family's water was poisoned. But we use cutesy Orwellian language, contaminated. Poisoned! They found out the water was poisoned. Starting in 2011 and extending to 2013, 3 years ago, and it was unequivocal. The water was poisonous. So naturally, the West Virginia DEP closed the investigation. Yeah, your water's poison. Too bad for you. Coal keeps lights on. Yeah. The investigation was closed. Because hell, all the hillbillies get their water poisoned. It's not like Hillary Clinton's going to come parachuting in and hold a town hall or anything. I mean, hell, that's what hillbillies are for. Hillbillies are for poisoning and killing and blasting and burning and blowing up. Been doing it to them for 125 years, and they don't seem to much complain about it. They just keep going to church and praying to God that God will make things better, and then they go to the funeral. And then the next generation grows up, and you poison and burn and blast and bury, and yeah. During the hearing, DEP environmental specialist Dustin Johnson, now notice this guy works for the same people who closed the investigation after they found out the water was poisoned, testified that water sampling during the initial investigation revealed contaminants, read poisons, exceeded both Environmental Protection Agency standards for drinking water and natural levels for the area. This is important. Because one of the dodges that the coal industry always falls back on is, well, you know, the water around there ain't real good in the first place. Never mind the fact that 9, 10, 11 generations, not counting the generations of indigenous people who lived here for 15,000 years, didn't seem to have much problem. Yeah, the water around there ain't never been much good anywho. And I mean, Environmental Protection Agency standards, that's just job-killing regulations is all them is. Yeah, he also testified petitioners William and Regina Cook's well water contained more than 40 times the amount of iron allowed under EPA standards. Other families involved in the suit have 30 times, 10 times, and 5 times the amount allowed by EPA standards. Well, I mean, 5 times. Really, 5 times as much iron as the EPA says you should have in your water? Really? We're going to file a lawsuit over that? Now, you need to understand something. Down there in Wyoming County, you have no idea among a certain part of the population down there how much William and Regina Cook's how much William and Regina Cook are despised. 40 times the amount of iron under EPA standards. Well, if the EPA just go along and leave us alone and let us mine coal, we could be prosperous here. Damn Obama and his war on coal. Damn them cooks. They never was no good know-how. Just a bunch of troublemakers sitting up a holler, minding their own business, thinking they got some sort of God-given right to drink clean water from a well. I got a family to feed. I got to put food on my family. And all I know is mining coal. And then this little gem. We were talking about iron, remember? Too much iron in the water. Other tests revealed elevated levels of arsenic, lead, and manganese. Hint, none of that is good for human water-based life forms. Or many other water-based life forms here on the planet. Nope, not even a little bit. Up in the frozen north, all that much iron, et cetera, makes it sound like a really good one-a-day vitamin. Oh, hell yeah! Except it's not the kind of iron that can be absorbed by the human body. I mean, it just sort of terminates and stays resident, and it's not particularly good for you. Strong teeth and bones, y'all! Thoughts and prayers. Other tests revealed elevated levels of arsenic, lead, and manganese. Lead? Lead? Did somebody say lead? I wonder if lead does the same thing to children's brains up a hillbilly holler in Appalachia as it does in Flint. Why, yes, yes, as a matter of fact, it does. Oh, Hillary! Johnson testified that he believed the well water was contaminated due to a neighboring abandoned slate dump next to the impoundment, not the impoundment itself. Remember, Dustin Johnson works for the DEP, and the purpose in life of the DEP is to try to make life better for the coal industry, not protect the environment. You know, what's in a name? Enter Dr. D. Scott Simonton. D. Scott Simonton is an environmental engineering professor at Marshall University, otherwise known as a scientist. He, meanwhile, testified that sulfate, iron, and manganese levels in samples fall in line with what could be expected, rationally, scientifically, logically, to a reasonable degree of engineering certainty, as the saying goes, to escape from a mining impoundment. But when it came right down to it, the slate dump and the impoundment, Dr. Simonton said both sites were likely involved in the contamination, other breed poisoning. But the coal slurry impoundment was a much more significant threat to groundwater than the slate dump. He also said he saw areas of leaching. What a pretty word that is, leaching around the impoundment. Calls placed to representatives from Eastern Associated Coal LLC, which of course stands for Limited Liability Corporation, were not immediately returned Thursday. Of course they weren't. They're busy trying to figure out how to, you know, screw some hillbillies. So, you know what I need to do, or anybody who's good at this kind of thing. Find me the references in the great ancient religious traditions of the world to the sacrosanct nature of water wells. Because they are. Well poisoning is about the nastiest, dirtiest, filthiest, rottenest, ungodliest thing you can do in most of the world's ancient religious traditions. Especially if your particular religious tradition happens to arise in a desert. And of course, finding a spot in the earliest settlement days of this region, and that, you know, that goes back into the 1740s. People started getting disgusted with tidewater culture pretty early, moving west. Lottie pointing out in the chat room, Bob, even Mark Twain acknowledged that water was rebirth and life in his novels. Blessed be the maker in his comings and goings. Tell me of your homeworld, Usel. But one of the first things you had to do if you were going to settle here and steal yourself some land from the natives was find a place that you could dig a well and have water that we tend to refer to around here as sweet. not hard, sweet water. Sweet water's a term you'll find all over the country. I'm sure, I'm almost certain there's a Sweetwater, Texas. Yeah, Sweetwater. And some of these wells that we're talking about having been ruined by Eastern Associated Coal may well have been producing sweet water for 200 years. Because that's one of those things about Appalachia. Appalachia is an exquisitely beautiful place. It's not particularly conducive to massive settlement, but for the peoples who came here and lived here before the coal was discovered, the great curse upon this region, this place was paradise. It was such a little paradise that that the indigenous peoples, before the white folks arrived, at one point had fought each other tooth and toenail over it, but eventually came to an uneasy peace, agreeing that in the summer months, when there was enough here for everyone, they would live in peace and hunt here and then go back to their traditional, more traditional living areas when it looked like time for the snow to fly. And you know what? That worked remarkably, sustainably well. And even after the white folks came in and started stealing land, my ancients among them, it worked well. It was a hard life, but unless you were some sort of Virginia Tidewater slave owner, there weren't any easy ones. It was easily on a par with trying to eke out a living as somebody's indentured slave or bought slave. And you didn't have anybody breathing down your neck, and all you had to do was, well, bend your back to it. And everybody worked. And nobody got a lot of, and everybody worked, and yeah, everybody worshipped and lived in fear of the Lord and mustered up what literacy they could find until they could start recapturing a lot of what was lost when they crossed the water. The first Kincaids who came over here were sons of a book publisher. You don't get much more literate than that. They had forgotten how to read inside two generations. But they were living. And they were thriving. It's not like Kincaid's one of those names that you only find one of in a phone book. And the Scots-Irish generally did that. And the average lifespan of someone living in the colonies or in this young country was 46, 47 years. We were burying people here who'd lived into their 90s. We also buried them who lived into their 40s. That's one of my... John Dean Kincaid and Polly Hyde Kincaid died within a week of each other in February of 1824 at a place called Sinking Springs. See, another water reference. They died within a week of each other in their 40s, and their young son had to set out for parts unknown. I'm guessing, I'm still researching it, I have not found the definitive answer, but I'm guessing it was probably either typhoid or diphtheria. Again with the water. Yeah, Carol Baker pointing out with regard to sweet water, I know exactly what you're talking about. When you taste it, you know it. Yeah. Most of America doesn't know what sweet water tastes like. Most of America thinks water tastes like swimming pool. Because it has to. Because of what we do to the water that even goes into the water treatment plants. See West Virginia American Water. See methylcyclohexane methanol, Supra. But all of that is going away. No, it's not going away. It's been taken away. And it's been taken away in the name of profit. And so, so we come full circle. And there it was on display in Flint last night. If you value water, if you think that it ought to be protected like gold, then you're most likely going to be a Bernie Sanders voter. Because you see, the system that Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton laid out was a system in which the need to make money comes first. Or
our energy security
comes first. All those hillbillies, all those generations, they survived quite admirably, thank you very much. Without the first lump of coal or the first cubic meter of frack gas or any gas. Oh, they adopted it lickety-split when it came along. And who doesn't love electricity? But we live in a, we are fortunate. We live in a time and a place where electricity need not be made by burning coal or setting fire to gas, both of which were buried by the planet itself as toxic waste hundreds of millions of years ago. We live in a time when we have the technology to draw energy from a star. We live in a time when we have the technology to make energy from the freshening breeze that comforts our faces. And if you value water and air more than you value some shareholder's right to clip coupons. Bernie Sanders' answer last night is the answer you would have given. No, I don't support fracking. Now, meanwhile, Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton has had fundraisers that were hosted by the fracking industry and people intimately associated with it. No. What'd he say? Well, my answer is going to be a lot shorter, because God knows he'd been interrupted every time he tried to open his mouth. My answer is going to be a lot shorter. No, I don't support fracking. Because if you just say no, if you engage the precautionary principle, if you say that people are more important than corporate profits, then you don't have to have gigantic regulatory schemes that will undoubtedly be violated again and 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 again. And when they're violated, will carry next to no penalties whatsoever. You don't need those. Because you just say we're smarter than that, we're better than that. And people are more important than that. No, I don't support fracking. So there you go. Minute past the hour, herewith endeth the filibobster for this More In Monday, the 7th of March, 2016. We try to raise $200 every evening to keep this little broadcast effort going. We've still got $200 to raise. This is Conversation Radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. We'll be back. Lines are open. 304-574-8178. 304-663-4676. And Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn.
Yes, I need a little water of love. You know it's evil when you're living alone.
Take any excuse I can to play that song. It's one of my favorite tracks off the original, well, the Dire Straits album, the one with Sultans of Swing on it. In fact, I had a voicemail from a dear old friend of mine Saturday morning. He was all excited. He had just been in downtown Florence, Alabama, and walked up to a guy and said, "Hey, you're Mark Knopfler." And Mark Knopfler said, "Yeah, I am." And my buddy was thrilled because he's, you know, worshipped at the Shrine for a very, very long time. And apparently Mark Knopfler was, you know, just running around, hanging out in the shoals because it's a really cool place to be. Yeah. It is... More in Monday on the horn. We got some more ends. I'm not kidding. But let's run over to the phones and check in real quick. Hey, welcome to the program. Yulu. I'm pretty sure you're there. Or you were. Dadgummit. Oh, not stress line problems. Oh, well. Hopefully that will come call back. Yeah, more ands. Oh, we do have them, don't we? Yeah. Let's find one. Shall we? Yes. How about New Hampshire? Yes. Oh, wait. Okay, let's see if this is going to work this time. Dadgummit. Why won't this thing stay paired? One second. Well, it shows connected. Okay, and? No, got to try again. Try back, please.
Right.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here? Yeah, connected. Okay, yeah. Barring that, just try 304-574-8178. That works, too. Hey, North Carolina. Yeah, I got that. Now, this is too much fun. There's been some lunacy. In Texas, I know you find that difficult to believe. But down in what is it, Travis County? Yeah, Travis County is the county that includes Austin, the state capital. the University of Texas. And they've got themselves a new county Republican Party chair.
Mm-hmm.
His name is Robert Morrow. And Robert Morrow is a real winner. He won the chairmanship of the Travis County GOP with a 54% total in the vote. Texas Tribune reached out to him, and he said, stand by. Okay, listen, try 304-574-8178, 304-574-8178, because for some reason or another, this phone isn't pairing. I'm going to stop it and restart it. I have no idea what's going on here. But anyway, it's a problem. And as is the case with the Republican Party all over the United States, they're having the Travis County Republicans are having a conniption too. Because see, Robert Morrow is a Drumpfer. Does that make him the Drumpfenführer? I don't know. Not yet, Gerald. Travis County is the fifth largest county in Texas. And people like Vice Chair Matt McCowiak are having purple polka-dotted kittens with crocheted tails.
We will explore every single option that exists, he said. Whether it be persuading him to resign, trying to force him to resign, constraining his power, removing his ability to spend money, or resisting any attempt for him to access data or our social media account. I'm treating this as a coup and as a hostile takeover.
The only problem is it was just a vote. It was democracy in action. Look, just because you've got a democratic process doesn't mean you're always going to like the outcome. It's not guaranteed. See, that's the thing Republicans don't really understand. They think democracy is defined as anything they want. Whereas if, say, that one gets into our White House, obviously democracy has failed. Well, when Robert Morrow was talking to the Tribune and they told him what McCowiak had said, he said,
tell them they can go fuck themselves.
Mm-hmm. This is the home Republican Party, by the way, for Texas Governor Greg Abbott. Dick. And to be fair, Morrow is a real winner. He spent time suggesting that Rick Perry of Head Ranch, Texas, is a secret bisexual. He's called him Governor Skank Daddy. An epic hypocrite. As recently as last week, he said, well, I think Perry's been a rampaging bisexual adulterer for many decades. He denies being a sexist. But he loves to talk about Hillary Clinton having sex.
I like beautiful women. I celebrate feminine beauty. I'm like Donald Trump. I love women.
And then when the Texas Tribune asked him a little bit more about his position, he said, you know, you're a perfect example of what the Trump movement is revolting against because you can't even pronounce the word, the one that begins with an N and ends in an R and has two G's and it isn't ginger. When you're talking about a Facebook post, what a pathetic excuse for a reporter you are. He gets to start being head of the Travis County Republican Party come June. and you know, it couldn't happen to a nicer bunch. All right, let's try this again and run over to the other line. Hey, welcome to the program.
What's up, Bob?
There you are, Jim. I thought that was you.
Yeah, I'm using the landline.
Sounds great.
Really great opening arguments. I mean, fantastic. I mean, what's interesting about it, because I was listening intently, I missed, like, I don't know, the first 10, 15 minutes, but it rings a chord, because I was on the internet last night, and I was putting out my pro Bernie tweets, and then I get this guy, and he's a fellow, because one of the, believe it or not, I follow quite a few atheist sites, and he's a fellow atheist, but he has a problem with my supporting Bernie. And it was so weird. But then he's like, he just thinks, and basically, in his, you know, like they had that little part where it says, you know, likes, dislikes, and stuff. And he mentions something to the effect free market and all that. And so we're tweeting back and forth. But I mean, you basically, in fact, I might have to re-listen to what you said, so if and when I ever tweet again this particular individual, I can point these out to them, not that it would do any good, because I know a lot of times, particularly with capitalists, I mean, basically your analogy of the West Virginia, you know, and he pointed, and I remember one of the last tweets I got from him was... become a stockbroker. Basically, like, everybody can become a stockbroker, and I didn't get a chance to tweet back. If everybody's a stockbroker, who's going to grow the food, blah, 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 you know, the that kind of stuff. You know, who's going to work at the grocery stores? Who's going to be the grocery store manager if everybody's a stockbroker? And I didn't even get a chance to get into, remember 1929? That's when, like, everybody and their grandmother was in the stock market, you know.
Everybody wasn't. My grandfather was in the groceries market, and he ran a little country store, and the Republicans wiped him out, and he didn't have a damn thing on Wall Street. It's just by the time they got done raping and pillaging, probably a poor use of the probably ought not use the rape word. But by the time they got done pillaging the economy and had crashed the market into a million tiny pieces, there was no money left to lend. And so the little bit of credit that had trickled downstream toward him that allowed him to buy on credit and pay back the next month, while when he got paid back from the people he was selling groceries to, well, that all dried up.
Yeah, it's funny how capitalism works that way. You know, and I was thinking of, you know, I wonder, you know, I don't know if I tweeted it. I mean, what do you support? Unbridled capitalism, no rules. I mean,
well, I just love Jim. I just love when you talk about the need for water and people start saying things like, yeah, but the money, the poor money. What about the poor money?
You can't drink money, man.
But see, if you've got money, you can buy clean water from somewhere else.
Well, not if nobody's making it or harvesting it, I guess, because everything's a commodity. You know, I mean, exactly. I see where he's coming from. I just disagree. Just like, you know, with Hillary supporters, you have a right to support her. I probably will vote for her if she gets the nomination, or even if she steals it outright, and it's blatantly obvious to me. You know, I'm very aware of conspiracies, and that's just something in my blood.
No, you?
Yeah.
You, Jim Garrison's kid? No.
Well, man, I kind of have an eye on that kind of shit, but it's, I just find it, you know, and I can tell by, you know, just by the tweets back and forth. Not that we've had a ton of them or anything, but he's already with that mindset. And when I saw that he had, like, it wasn't free market exactly, but it was something to that effect. And, you know, it's like you have to have rules, and it depends on who. And then I almost got into depends on who writes the rules. And basically, the rules now, and for most of the time, they had been written by, you know, the money class, because he has the money rules. And, but I almost, that's why I don't, in a way, I love Twitter, and another way, I don't, because I don't feel like, I don't know if it's going to do any good, because they people, and I might be the same way. In fact, maybe I am. Artie, I see my points. I've heard yours are wrong. Thank you very much. You know, I try not to be that way, though. You know, I try to be objective and open-minded to other lines of thought. But, I mean, that cap, unbridled capitalism, just doesn't work. And I wondered if I should have used something like democratic socialism. I don't think that would have affected him at all, because a lot of people, they just hear the S word and they lose their shit. You know?
Well, you know, the best way to deal with that is to say, "Hey, got a Social Security card in your wallet?" And they go, "Well, yeah." And you go, "Well, that makes you a card-carrying socialist, buddy."
Oh, I have a thing about going down that line. You know, about all the benefits of Social Security, and I was even thinking about going down my personal road of existence, like how. I'm on disability, as you know, and it's definitely not enough, but it's, you know, without it, where I was going to go with that, what, do you want the street, you want it to look like India does and still did, or if it's improved a little bit because we exported a lot of jobs over to India, but I'm sure there's still a lot of people, including not just the untouchables.
I wouldn't do that because India is a socialist country.
Is it? I don't think it was. You know, since we sent a lot of jobs over there, we just pay halfway decent money and don't anymore. Maybe over there you're rolling in the dough if you've got one of the jobs over there, which used to pay, you know, a lot. And then that made me start thinking about 20, 30 years ago when there was the computer boom and all that, and everybody's going to be making big money and everything's going to be rolling, rocking and rolling, and everybody's, you know, two chickens in every pot, plus a lot more. What did the capitalists do as soon as they got a chance? They exported the jobs. You know,
right? Because keeping labor as cheap as possible is what they're about.
Oh yeah.
Because I mean, if you look at the model, they're stuck with the supply and demand based cost of raw materials. So the place the where you make your money is by pressing down as hard as you can on the working people and keeping wages low. You know, I mean that's Milton Friedman. You know, with his dead hand reaching from the grave.
Yeah, but the stupid ass thing about that is you could free up a lot more money from the 1%, the top. You know, and they could still live pretty goddamn well, but it's just this insatiable greed factor that they need more and more and more. You know, I mean, I only have three cars. I need another one. I thought that was another thing I felt like saying. How many houses do you have? How many houses do you need? How big is your, you know, things like that. And, yeah, trying to do that 140 characters at a time is just...
No, it's damn difficult. And but see, that's the thing. Nobody tends to think systemically. We think individually. So, you know, somewhere out there, and you know what? Little Marco Rubio alluded to it at one point. He talked about how hard it is for him to keep his children clothed on the meager sums earned on a senator's salary.
What is that, $175,000, $184,000 a year?
Yeah, by the time you're done with all the perks and the pennies, a couple of grand.
That's not including what you might get on the side somehow.
I mean, a couple of hundred grand, yeah. So, I mean, you know, there are people out there going, you know, I mean, if we could just make another $100,000, we could probably make, you know, we could probably make it.
Yeah, well,
and I, you know, I guess I understand that.
Yeah, well, throw me in that crowd.
Yeah, who am I kidding? No, I don't understand that.
Yeah. Yeah, but, yeah, that was just interesting, you know. So, I mean, there was, you know, that unbridled capitalism or just capitalism, well, a very little regulation. And you see it all the time in different places in different ways, you know. It's just, that's what's great about your show and, Malloy's show. But of course, you know, if I weren't able to afford, satellite radio and cable and internet, which can happen real easy, you know, I mean.
Oh, yeah.
You know, what would I do? Be listening to Rush Limbaugh, which I've never really done. I saw a little bit of his TV show decades ago.
Yeah, don't do that.
But I'm not going there because I can't. Why even go there? I know they're effing wrong.
And you know, I love the way the minds work here in the community. At almost the identical same time, Steve in New York and Gerald in West Virginia both sent me messages, phrased exactly the same way. They dot want dot it dot. That's all.
Exactly. Yeah.
And you know, but I think even we have a hard time coming to terms, Jim, with what all means. They want all the money, all the wealth, but they want all the clean air and all the clean water.
But
they want all the education, because you know, if we get some of that education, Well, I mean, in a way, it's almost like a Garden of Eden scenario. What does it say? For if they eat from the fruit of the knowledge of good, of the tree of knowledge of good and evil, they will become like gods. Well, it's the same thing with the 0.1%. Well, if they get any of this stuff, they'll get to be like us. And then what fun will it be to be us? We'll be like them. It's Sneetches, Jim. I mean, you remember your Dr. Seuss.
Yeah,
well, star-bellied Sneetches and the Sneetches with no stars upon the R's.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. Well, it's awful good talking to you.
All right, I'll let you go. Just wanted to get my point across. And, oh, man, I don't know about you, man, but last night's debate, I saw it burning, and I'm not objective at all. In fact, I said in one of my tweets about that. I think Bernie kicked ass.
Well, he made his points every time he got a chance to get a word in edgewise.
And I like I said, in his first 15 minutes, I think he was touching on where he supposedly, it's my, I'm not finished talking yet, and I was supposedly sexist, and I've noticed that from some of the Hillary support.
Oh, no. Noticed some of it? No. David Brock's house organ, Blue Nation Review, that has flushed all of its credibility right down the toilet. Before the debate was even over, they had put out a hit piece saying, women react to Bernie's sexism. There's nothing sexist in treating your opponent the same way you'd treat any other.
Right,
if that had been Joe Biden interrupting him, he would have said, "Excuse me, I'm still talking."
Plus, like you said, if I remember correctly, that's kind of the way he talks. If you don't interpret it right, that's shame on you. I mean, you know, plus being, you know, just getting a point across. That's debate. It's not like he wasn't using certain touch words.
No. He didn't, and he didn't call her any names. And it's not sexist to insist upon following the rules, unless you're Dr. First Lady, Senator Secretary Clinton. Because see, they want to be all out there in your face, but at the same time, they want special victim treatment. So they're already, you know, that campaign is always ready. They're standing there with their hand on the crank, ready to gin up the wambulance.
All right. That was such a great line. I'm going to leave you on that. All right.
All right. See you, Jim. Bye now. Our buddy Jim calling from Louisiana, Stan. If you want to try the stress line, I rebooted the phone to see if maybe that'd make a difference. I don't know. But it's all hooked up. And then, of course, the Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, 304-574-8178, available as well. And I want to send out thanks to our dear friend Cindy in the Great Northwest and to our subscriber Dennis. We now have only $150 to go on fundraising for the evening. Thank you. It means a great deal. We need to keep... We just don't need to be getting in holes. We really, really don't. Hey, look. It's Carol Baker.
Howdy there. Echo or no echo?
No echo.
Okay, cool. So,
I misunderstood you for a minute there. I thought we were going to start singing the Ico Ico song.
Oh, no.
Ico Ico all day. Never mind.
No singing.
Nope, no, damn it.
Yeah, I watched the debate. I actually watched Downton Abbey last night because I wanted to see the series finale. So I watched the debate today, and I watched it twice. I never heard her tell him. I never heard him tell her to, you know, calm her ovaries, or I never heard him refer to her as sugar tits or anything. So
or shut up, you. You know,
yeah, but I will say
stifle
that
yourself. There was no stifle yourself, Edith.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's sugar tits. I got to say it, you know, with my Northeastern.
Yeah, right.
But anyway, I wasn't letting you get out of here tonight without talking about Nancy Reagan.
Yeah. Yeah. See, I started worrying as soon as the news broke yesterday. And to be honest, I missed probably the first 10, 15 minutes of the debate.
Mm-hmm.
And even if I had not been busy doing something and thought and looked up and gone, hey, the debate's on, and run in to fire it up, I still would have missed it anyway, because I didn't want to be there for the orgy of false piety over over the untimely death of the ever youthful 94-year-old Nancy Reagan.
Yeah, I just could not stop laughing at how the mainstream media has taken her legacy to the dry cleaners to get all those ugly stains out of it before they bury her.
Oh, yeah, because, I mean, there are some things.
Well, you know, it's just like, well, you'll talk about her with respect, or you won't talk at all. Want to bet?
Well, I'm just trying to follow the thumper. I was just all day long. I mean, I posted it early on, said I'm invoking the thumper rule, and which is interesting because that's actually one of my nicknames is thumper. Yeah, if you can't say nothing nice, don't say nothing at all.
I thought I was as nice as I knew how to be. You know my motto, I've come to bury Caesar, not to praise him.
Yeah, but I mean, but there's real stuff out there.
Oh, yeah.
The active role that she took in trying to suppress the reality of what we then simply referred to as AIDS,
mm-hmm.
that was burning up the gay community.
Well, it was the whole Reagan administration and that disgusting piece of shit for a Surgeon General, C. Everett Koop. They were so busy trying to demonize smokers, not smoking, but smokers, that they couldn't be bothered. They had been warned and warned and that there was something bad coming down the pike and that we needed to put money and research into this. And they were like, no. That's just, you know, God's punishment for butt sex. So they ignored it and they turned their backs on the entire health community, because the truth of the matter is there were a lot of straight people who were infected with HIV who were so needlessly out of sheer ignorance. But we can thank the Reagans for that.
And, you know, maybe Rock Hudson will be waiting for her if there's an afterlife.
They were lifelong friends, Nancy and Rock Hudson, and when he was sick, she didn't want nothing to do with him.
Well, there was a specific instance, Carol.
There was
one hospital on the planet, a hospital in France, a national hospital in France, that was trying an experimental drug with which they had some success in treating patients. And Rock Hudson chartered a plane, flew to France, and the French government said, "I'm sorry, sir, you're not a French citizen. You can't have this treatment." And so one of his friends immediately sent off a telegram to Nancy Reagan saying, "Please, this is a matter of life and death. Please, won't you just suggest to the French that maybe they'd like to, you know, that they should do this as out of humanity?"
Yep.
And her response was to say, tell him to go to the consulate. Tell him to go to the embassy, because we can't be seen to be getting involved in, I think the words were something like this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And eventually he did get into the hospital, but by then it was, too late.
Yes, yes. And that isn't, that actually, it bothered me horribly, but it was the whole just say no war on drugs thing.
Well, and God knows just say no did more harm than we can even begin to measure.
Well, it never addresses the root causes of it, which are, you know, income inequality and crime and addiction and mental illness and a whole bunch of other things that are involved in it. But this simple just say no, it's like, okay, I've stood over you and I've looked down upon you and I've said, just say no. Oh, my work here is done. I get to just wash my hands of it.
Right.
Now it's on you. You know, it's like the guy in the three-piece suit who drives down the interstate in his Cadillac Escalade and screams at these guys under these homeless people under the bridge and goes, "Get a job, you scumbag." And they look at each other and they go, "Oh my God, life-changing. Why didn't I think of that?"
Yeah. I missed that. Yeah. But see, I mean, the just say no. I hear the phrase, Carol, and it's painful to me.
And to me,
I hear the phrase, and it just reminds me of how simple and simply hateful that administration was.
Yes,
because see, just say no is no answer at all.
No, it isn't.
The real inquiry is, why does anyone say yes? But if you start pursuing that line of inquiry, you start finding out a whole lot of stuff you really didn't want to know.
That's exactly right.
And if just as if the Reagan administration had paid adequate attention to HIV back then, they would have found out it wasn't a gay disease.
That's right.
And then they would have found out how many other groups were at risk. And then it would have become a problem. And it wouldn't have. Jerry Falwell, and I'm sure he's part of the reception committee too, couldn't have stood in the pulpit and said, "My friends, this is a gay plague that is being delivered upon the homosexuals by Almighty God because of their dissolute and filthy lifestyles. Praise Jesus." Because all of that vile shit weaves in and out and back and forth and becomes part of the larger filthy tapestry.
Yes, it does.
And we are plagued with it to this day.
That's right. And it tied right in then to the war on crime, where, you know, a generation, you know, it led to a generation of people of color being incarcerated.
Well, and then there's Central America. I mean, that whole era is just toxic, Carol.
Absolutely.
And yeah, her fingerprints were on some of it.
Mm-hmm.
The whole business that they didn't make decisions in the White House until Nancy had consulted her astrologer.
That's right.
But, you know, going back to Falwell, when Falwell said what he said, was he denounced by the White House for that?
Never.
Never. So I imagine I haven't had anybody contact me, because a lot of my friends in the gay community are really, really decent human beings.
As are mine.
So I have not been contacted with anybody saying, you know, it's about time, or saying, you know, please don't forget, you know. And the right wing's already gone crazy, by the way. I don't know if you're aware of this, but let's see. One of the first things to come out was, you just watch that unclassy Michelle Obama won't even go to the funeral.
Oh, I'm sure.
Nancy was classy. Michelle ain't classy.
Classy.
And let's see. I've got a right wing POS right here right now. Just gotta wait till the computer decides to cooperate. Over on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, one of their attack bots, in this case, someone by the name of Trish Regan, not Reagan.
Mm-hmm.
Declared that Nancy Reagan was everything feminists should aspire to be.
Oh. Stupid. Bigoted. Self-absorbed.
Vicious.
Vicious.
Trish Regan said, as a kid, I just thought she looks pretty happy, and we since learned she genuinely was. She was dedicated to her husband. She was a formidable advisor to him, understanding they were very much a team. She worked tirelessly for her Just Say No campaign, and she was an advocate for Alzheimer's research. You know, I give her the Alzheimer's research part.
After her husband was diagnosed, did she give a shit about Alzheimer's before it directly involved her family? Like every other conservative, never gives a shit about anything until it directly involves their family.
Well, there's
because
that.
They are completely without empathy.
Yeah, and Dogman in the chat room just pointed out, Carol, Nancy said Just Say No while her husband's administration unleashed the cocaine scourge on the nation via Iran-Contra.
Absolutely. You know, but we don't talk about arms for hostages. We don't talk about the shit deal that he did with Iran to keep those people held hostage until the night of the election. We don't talk about Oliver North. We don't talk about him sitting there coming on TV and actually saying, I know that I said that I didn't do this, and at the time I honestly believed in my heart that I didn't, but, you know, the facts remain. And I'm sitting there going, how can you sit there with a straight face? And America bought it. America bought it.
America wanted to, Carol. You know, it's that whole W.C. Fields thing, you know, the three commandments, the first of which is you can't cheat an honest man.
That's true.
And America wanted to buy into the Reagan myth. We wanted to believe that we were desperate to believe that everything was okay.
And I was not. I wasn't that desperate even back then.
Oh, no, some of us didn't fall for it. I knew who he was. I didn't get to vote in the 1980 election, but there was no doubt that, I mean, my parents got it right, even in, you know, Alabama.
I'm a little older than you. I did get it right, too.
But there's so much history that will be absolutely shellacked in the next couple of days. And, well...
Tim's son said, just say no. Well, Nancy got her karma when she asked the Republicans if they would support stem cell research so that her hubby could have been treated for his Alzheimer's, and all of them just said no. Now, that was a good day. All her millions did nothing to save her husband.
Yeah, and Jim reminds me via email that Kitty Kelly's biography of the Reagans... And in the references, Jim cites to this quote from the inimitable John Huston. I'll play it real quick. Oh, now, why is that going on? Damn it! I'm still not completely back to 100%. But okay, no, we can do this now.
Politicians, ugly buildings, and whores all get respectable if they last long enough.
That was Jim's reference. this Trish Regan said, Nancy Reagan was everything a feminist should aspire to be, because Nancy Reagan believed not in society making choices for women, but in women making choices for ourselves.
Nancy Reagan was a quieter version of Phyllis Schlafly. Don't kid yourself.
Oh, God, you brought her up.
She was, if you think about it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, absolutely. But remember, anytime you mention her name on the program, Carol, you have to say National Treasure Phyllis Schlafly.
No, you can't make me.
Come on, Carol. No fruit cup. I mean, we've been told. I mean, it's not like Pat Buchanan said she's a national treasure, or Rush Limbaugh. We've been told by the smartest man on the internet.
Tom Hartman, Captain Milk Toast.
She's a national treasure. Yeah.
Captain Milk Toast. Sorry. No.
Phyllis Schlafly, national treasure.
Shut up.
I'm going to make you, if I keep this up, I'm going to make you violate the plea agreement.
Yes, you are. Because I still have some of that homemade wine in the house.
Amanda Marcotte over at Salon did a pretty good job. She said, feminism is a movement to secure women's equality to men, not a self-help movement here to validate every choice as equal to every other. The truth is that Nancy Reagan was part of a conservative women's movement to valorize inequality as somehow good for women and truer to their inherent nature. More than anything, anti-feminism might be Nancy Reagan's most lasting legacy. Her brand of anti-feminism, which posits that inequality is little more than a freely made choice women make, continues to be a powerful force fueling conservative arguments against feminism and feeding continuing pressure on women to step back and live lives in the shadows of their husbands.
That's right. That's exactly it.
Yeah, Gerald points out, you know, it's easy to become a martyr after the fact.
Yeah.
Kind of like Christopher Reeve didn't really give a shit about quadriplegics until he became one. That's pretty cold. But
that's also
all too human, okay? It's what I was saying earlier. We see ourselves as individuals, not part of a group.
But it's like the politicians who stand there in the great houses of what was once our democracy and talk about people who are gay as though they're all sex offenders and pedophiles. until they find out that one of their children are.
Yeah, right.
And then suddenly they don't talk like that anymore.
Not so much.
So I'm just saying.
Yeah, and you know, it's not like the death of Antonin Scalia, where, you know, I just felt an urge to, you know, talk about what a tawdry record he had left behind.
That's true.
I mean, I'm sure Patty and Ron Jr. Loved her dearly.
You know, it was funny because I just watched a documentary yesterday morning on Ron Reagan talking about his father on his 100th birthday. And he really loved his dad, but he was very open about the very fundamental ideological differences that he had with him, but how he was not present as a parent, how when he decided to become a ballet dancer, despite, you know, all the talk of him being supposedly gay when he was already married, that his parents just said, if that's what you want to do, then that's what you should do. He said they were kind about it and they didn't judge me, and he really, it was painful for him to talk about, you know, being with his father in the last moment. And on a very human level, I understood that. And from someone on the outside looking in, you know, you can relate to that as someone who's been with a parent or someone who is that you have helped make that final transition to no longer being alive. You get that. And then you have to step back and you have to say, but look at the lasting damage that these people did as a couple, as a power couple, to generations of this country. We're now going on our second one that have been horribly damaged. And he wasn't a terribly bright man. He had that. He had those Hollywood 50s kind of looks, and he could say all the right things, you know, but his Shining Mansion on a Hill speech and the welfare queens, and not that Nancy said any of that, but, you know, she did plenty of damage on her own. I'm having a hard time rustling up the whole pity thing.
Yeah, no, I get it. And see, going back to what Dogman said, the just say no provided a convenient veneer for all the really sleazy, miserable, tawdry, bloodthirsty crap that the Reagan administration was actively doing. I mean, their record, exactly. History is history. Their record is their record. It is immutable now.
But it was such a grand pronouncement, and it's exactly the same tactic that conservatives use today for any social issue. Just say no is akin to just get a job. Just bathe. Just cut your hair. Just be what, just, you know, bootstraps. Just say no is bootstraps.
Yeah. Listen, I mean, we know that your pitiful little poor life is pitiful and shitty and miserable, and there's really no hope, and there's really no way out, but, you know, just say no.
And for God's sake, stop asking for food stamps and stop asking to try to get your, you know, even though
nobody that the Reagans were swanning around with, nobody was telling them to just say no to the eighth martini.
No, absolutely not.
Or all of those titans of Wall Street. I mean, I remember the 80s, okay? I remember them surprisingly well.
Mine are a little foggier than yours.
Under the circumstances, you know. I mean, God, there were some places it seemed like there was cocaine in gumball machines. They may have been.
Oh, my God, was it everywhere?
And, you know, nobody was telling the Wall Street high flyer
there in the men's room of the nightclub, you know, grabbing a little bump of Bolivian marching powder to just say no. I mean, that was part of their lifestyle.
Oh, absolutely. And if you were wealthy, you know, it was the poor people, as crack cocaine came to be, and that's what was affordable for the poor people. Well, you know, we all know what sentencing guidelines were like for rock cocaine as opposed to powder cocaine. Because
sure,
it's the difference between what white people used and black people used.
Well, yeah, and then there's freebasing.
Sure.
And I remember after he came back from a horrible disfiguring accident, one of my comic heroes, Richard Pryor, opened up his show afterward. He'd light a match on stage and say, "What's this?" And then he'd sort of bobble it across in front of you. "Yeah, that's Richard Pryor running. Yeah, that's funny, ain't it?"
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Because,
and I've decided that every time you use the phrase "national treasure" with regard to
yes,
Mrs. Schlafly, I'm just gonna use the H word and give Gerald all the money.
Oh, okay. Well, you two are conspiring behind my back, aren't you?
He does split the pool with me once in a while.
I get it. Well, one last thing, you know, while we're out here on the ledge on Moran Monday.
Indeedy.
I've got a Moran Monday nomination that won't wait.
Oh, please do.
Seeing as how you watched the debate twice today and everything.
Mm-hmm.
That skinny little smiling religious lady from toward the end of the debate.
Yes.
Her name was Denise something, and she was from...
The one that works for a newspaper?
No. She's the one that asked... She's the Jesus lady.
Oh, the Jesus lady. Yes.
In fact, I've got the audio here, shall we?
Please do.
Oh, goody. Come on. Work. Working. Here we go, I think. Someday, my clip will run. No singing.
We have a question from Denise Gaddis. She grew up here in Flint, Michigan. She says she's undecided on a candidate. She's got a question for Senator. Actually, she's got two questions.
Undecided,
first one is for Senator Sanders, then she'll ask another question to Secretary Clinton. Denise?
Thank you. Senator Sanders, do you believe that God is relevant?
Yeah, okay.
Why or why not?
Well, I think, well, the answer is yes.
Okay, that's enough. Do you believe God is relevant? Why or why not?
To what?
Well, the price of... The price of rice on the international rice end, I don't know. I don't know. Was God relevant to Michael Brown on that day in August?
No.
Was God relevant to Eric Garner on that day in New York?
Nope.
Was God relevant to Walter Scott on that day in North Charleston?
Not so much.
Was God relevant in his own house at Mother Emanuel?
I'm going to have to say no.
And I'm guessing it's going to be a no for... Was God relevant in a movie theater in Aurora, Colorado?
Nope.
Do we have to go on like this?
No.
Hey, it was one of the most... I mean, moments like this, I look at the for-profit media and I think, you know, you scumbags.
Exactly.
Because, see, there's this little thing out there called Article 6, Clause 3 of this little pamphlet called the Constitution of the United States.
Yes.
And it says, and I'm paraphrasing, there shall be in no way any religious test for holding
national office.
Well, and it takes me back to that famous episode of The West Wing, the show singularly responsible for getting me through 8 years of the Bush administration without killing myself. And there was that episode about Arnie Vinnick, the Republican, being hammered because he didn't go to church after his wife died. And they were hammering and hammering and hammering. And finally, he went and talked to President Bartlett in the White House. And over ice cream, they were having a conversation about it. And finally, he went out and he met reporters and he said, I'm not going to answer that question because the moment that you ask any political figure the question, you're begging them to lie to you. Because they're always going to tell you what you want to hear. And it doesn't matter. It does not matter because, again, there will be no religious test. But when you ask a man about something so personal as his faith and how it applies to how they're going to lead you, you are, by default, asking them to lie to you. So the question is irrelevant.
Yeah,
and it should be.
Right. But this particular setup, I when you mentioned the West Wing, I thought you were going to talk about the scene with the doctor.
With Dr. Jenna.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. I love that one. But no, that there was a better one that applied to this one, because it's directly related to two guys running for president and how the press tries to hammer one of them down on their personal faith.
Well, I mean, this particular moment, I thought was especially obnoxious because they actually let the cat out of the bag. I don't know if you noticed this, Carol. But so, what's her name? Denise, and she's from St. George of Flint Greek Orthodox Church, okay?
Uh-huh.
So she's obviously a Christer. It's not like she was a Unitarian. And she asks that complete bullshit question that is apropos of precisely zero,
exactly,
within the overall overarching context of the entire evening.
And why are you asking the Jew?
Bingo. Why do we ask the Jew first? And so then, because he's been, and in fact, I talked about it on the program. I don't know if you remember or not. There was that one asshat in some for-profit media piece. I think it was the New York Times. You know, the gang in the tank for Hillary.
Mm-hmm.
And they found some guy to say, oh no, Joe Lieberman's candidacy for the vice presidency was much more important than Bernie's because Joe's a real Jew.
Ah, a real Jew. Did he refuse to sit next to a woman on a plane or something?
I don't know. But of course, it was, you know, there's no way to get around this, you know, short of Bernie suddenly going blind and declaring, what is this, the road to Damascus? I'm a Christian now. Short of that, there's no way around this thing. So he talks about his Jewishness and he talks about seeing people when he was a kid, seeing people with tattoos on their arms who had been in the death camps.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And it was a rock solid. It was as solid an answer as you can give. Of course, you tell people, sure, God's relevant.
You know, the German teacher in my sister's high school, I'll never forget, her name was Elsa Bunty. And Mrs. Bunty had a number tattooed on her forearm. And you don't forget that.
No, you don't. My German teacher in high school was just a little girl during the waning days of the Third Reich.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't get to go on this trip. I wanted to, but I'd already been to Rome previous year. But she took a tour group to Germany every year. And when it came time to visit Berchtesgaden, she stayed on the bus.
Mm-hmm.
She was that traumatized. She didn't want to be anywhere near that. She let the students go on in the care of the tour guide, but she didn't want anywhere near it because she was still terrified of the world that she had lived in as a child. And so, I mean, he gave as relevant an answer as he could, but it was designed, and shame, 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 shame on CNN, Carol, for even letting this sneak in. Because it didn't, I'm just guessing, but I doubt if either Hillary or Bernie's partisans, or Democrats generally, are out there saying, gee, I wonder what it's like to go to church with Bernie and Hillary.
Exactly.
It was relevant to absolutely nothing, but they had to get it in there. Well, I think CNN's in the tank for Hillary.
Well, I haven't gotten over Anderson Cooper's question during the first debate, which wasn't a question at all. It was an indictment of Bernie Sanders about... He made it as a statement of fact, not a question, that Bernie and Jane Sanders honeymooned in the Soviet Union.
Yeah, which is so much bullshit.
Which is an out-and-out lie.
Yeah, and we dissected it here quite adequately, I think.
Yes, we did.
So then the question goes, and this is where it gets even skankier. Then the question goes to Hillary. And the question is, what God do you pray to? And Agnes was right here when that went, and I started shouting, and I got the baby, honey, Bob,
the God of Wall Street.
Well, there,
the God of unbridled greed, and the lust for power.
Yeah,
that one.
Yeah, that one. But see, it was all set up for her to. For her to say, what God do you pray to? And all she had to do was say, Jesus! And it would have been done.
Absolutely.
But, to give her credit, I think she was all set to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But then she remembered she was in Michigan, which has a substantial... Muslim population.
Mm-hmm.
And so she goes into this long, tortured, convoluted, evasive, weird answer about God.
Mm-hmm.
And somewhere along the way talks about how humble she is.
But it was
probably between that and the fracking question. Those were the two most important parts of the evening for me.
Yes.
And it was, and see, here was the fun part. Hillary gave away the dodge because see, they didn't say, here's Denise Galifianakis from St. George's of Flint Greek Orthodox Church. They mm-hmm. said, here's religious lady Denise Galifianakis or whatever, Gaffris or what the ever. And she's got a religion. She's got two religion questions. See, there was no disclosure there, Carol.
Right.
But Hillary tipped a hand.
Yes.
She said, and I've been in your church. Actually, she didn't. She did. I wish she, no. But she said, I've been in your church, and I've spoken in your church. Which, of course, was nudge, nudge, wink, wink, you know.
Uh-huh.
You know, Jews can't walk into churches. They catch fire, you know.
I'll have to talk to the relatives about that.
It's a well-known true fact. And they don't show up in mirrors. Oh, that's vampires. Wait a minute. Because there's a lot of garlic in matzo ball soup, and yeah, that's awesome. Nobody was supposed to know that it was all a setup. It was all a big religious setup.
Of course it was, and that's why I can't run for public office. Absolutely, I can't run for public office because I would look at somebody and go, "None yet."
Well, you know, it would have been a great moment, and of course he would have been pilloried for it. Blue Nation Review would have been out immediately with a worldwide blast saying, "Bernie Sanders refuses to answer religion question, probably atheist."
Yes.
But the fact of the matter is, you know what the most appropriate answer to that question is? You know, is God relevant? Ma'am, he may be relevant to you. He may be more relevant to another. He may be, or she, or it, may be less relevant to someone else. The key to faith, as John Kennedy reminded us all, is that faith is an intensely personal thing. It is possibly the most personal thing.
Blue Nation Review. Yep, atheist.
And may I remind you, ma'am,
that would have been the right answer. Yeah,
and may I remind you, ma'am, that Article 6, Clause 3 of the Constitution of the United States says there shall be no religious test for holding national office. Right. And so your question, ma'am, is really kind of un-American. And then his candidacy would have gone right down the toilet, which is why I'm not running for president.
Or me.
But that's the answer, Carol.
Of course it's the answer. It's the right answer. It's truly the only answer.
Jesus.
I saw what you did there.
I knew you did. You're very good.
Anyway, I've enjoyed my time on the ledge with you. I just wanted to...
Remember, don't flick your cigarette butts out onto the people below.
I promise, but I just wanted to offer my condolences to, you know, the Reaganites.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Reaganauts.
So sad to hear about Nancy.
One last thing before you go. Now, yes. I can't remember. Out in Hooterville.
Yes.
Does Missouri have everybody can concealed carry yet? There's only six states, like Arizona, Alaska, Arkansas.
Not everybody, no. But they're working on it really hard. They're working on it very, very hard.
Well, we've got it here now.
Oh, yay.
Bless his little heart. Coal-fired on the way out Governor Earl Ray Tomlin, GERT, for the second year in a row, did the right thing and vetoed the everybody carry a gun everywhere law. In the space of less than 24 hours, the West Virginia House of Delegates and the West Virginia Senate overrode that veto. So starting, I think, like May 26th, maybe?
Right.
If not March 26th, everybody over the age of 18 in West Virginia who can get enough money onto the table to buy one can carry a concealed weapon in this state with no training whatsoever.
Charming. Well, let's see. I'm on the State Highway Patrol website, and as soon as the sucker loads... I will tell you exactly where we're at with that, because it's short. It just takes a minute, because, you know, two tin cans and a string. Cannon.
Cannon. Oh, by the way, it turns out the 18 to 21-year-olds do have to have training.
Oh. Well, what about the 14-year-olds?
We'll be amending downward in fairly short order.
I would imagine you will.
But since we're out here on the ledge.
Yes.
I don't feel good. I'm not clowning around, Carol.
Yeah.
I don't feel good about this. And I'm afraid about this.
You should be afraid about it, Bob. Because every time they do something like this, it only results in more death. You take a state that's got the kind of poverty and drug problems that you have, and then you make it absolutely the easiest thing in the world to get a gun. And what do you imagine the results are going to be? And it only takes one person having an episode for just absolute predictable things to happen. I refuse to use the word tragedy.
Oh, no. You know how I feel about that word. That word comes from the ancient Greek, and it implies that somebody had it coming. You know, tragic flaw.
Exactly.
And exactly. By the way, you might want to pick up on this. I saw a phrase used by my good friend Joy Flood from Facebook. She's up in Michigan. She's a native Texan, and she refers to this sort of thing as "oops, blam, pray." And if it wasn't so goddamn serious, that would be hilarious. To me, oops, blam, pray sounds like a Dutch purveyor of Kevlar vests. But that's the phenomenon. Oops, blam, pray. Oops, blam, pray. Thoughts and prayers.
That's it.
Because, see, I mean, I got enough to worry about with the pissed off coal people. I'm an easy target. And I'm sure it would be gratifying to, you know, kill some tree hugger. God knows they've threatened to for years, and you just live with it.
Right.
But there's the oops, blam, pray factor, and that scares the shit out of me. So Cletus is at the Wally World, and he's got him that loaf of frozen garlic bread that the wife sent him for. And, you know, it's kind of cold and slickety.
Yeah.
And he's got that jug of milk. And he didn't stop and get a basket or anything because he just needed the garlic bread and the milk. and he's got a semi-automatic handgun on his side.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, he's got one in the chamber because, you know, you got to be ready. And so he gets through the checkout, and he's standing there in the checkout line, and the slickety frozen garlic bread kind of slips, and he reaches to catch that, and he knocks his Freedom Protector loose, and it falls on the ground while he's reaching for his wallet, and then, oops, blam, pray.
That's it.
And some kid who couldn't afford fucking college is standing there with a bullet hole through his head.
That's right.
Because the legislature of West Virginia has declared that a training requirement or a permit is actually nothing more than an unconstitutional tax on our God-given sacred right to keep and bear arms.
Exactly. Our conceal and carry law basically says you can't take it into a jail, you can't take a gun into a courthouse, to a city council meeting, to an airport, a child care facility or school, a riverboat gambling facility, an amusement park.
We ain't got none of them.
Or any place where it's posted. If they post no guns, you can't bring your gun. You can have it in the car, but it has to be in the passenger compartment. You can't have it, you know, like strapped to you while you're driving.
You can't?
No. Possession, let's see, it is unlawful. Where is it at? Where are you? Yeah. Firearm in a vehicle. No, that's not it. I just read it.
Oh, and while we're at it, Carol, yes. As Gerald reminds me, people need to know that this was not an exclusively, expressly teabagger thing. There was lots and lots of Democrats who voted for this, too.
I believe it.
And you know what? I don't care, teabagger, Republican, or Democrat. There's not a one of these miserable bastards are going to show up at the first baby's funeral from what they've done.
No, but the Democrats did it because they know that it's West Virginia, and if you want to get reelected, then that's what you do.
Yeah. But I mean, I'm really scared. And I'm scared for me, and I'm scared for Agnes, and I'm scared for Ferg, and I'm scared for Margie, and I'm scared for my daughter and son-in-law, and most particularly, I'm scared for three precious little grandbabies.
Well, that, Bob, is because, like you, I live in an area of people who are abjectly poor, there's a huge substance abuse problem. I live in the ghetto of the county here in Hooterville.
Oh, don't use that word.
I goddamn well will. I will. Anybody who says that that's purely a word that applies to people of color hasn't seen the living conditions of the people where I live. It is a ghetto.
Yeah, ain't been up no holler.
So whether they like it or whether they don't, they can call me a racist. They can do whatever they want to. But I don't really care.
Or they can fuck right the fuckity fuck off.
Yeah. I've been known to say that.
I know. I stole it.
But I worry about all those things because these are all the Trump voters. These are all the people who believe, you know, he tells it like it is. No, he tells it like you wish it were.
He tells it like you want to hear it.
You know, because you spent all this time trying to convince yourself that your food stamps are okay, but food stamps of people of color are just them mooching off the system. You know, all of their, you know, it's their disability check that's the one that's deserved, but someone else's disability check is just gaming the system. I hear this all day, every day.
I have no doubt.
All day, every day. Which is why I stay away from these people as much as possible. I'm reviled in my neighborhood, and I'm perfectly fine with that.
Yeah, it's pretty much the same thing here. I mean, I don't go around trying to make trouble or anything. But, you know, if somebody asks me a question, I won't bullshit them.
They have begged me to run for the Board of Aldermen again or for the Homeowners Association. I'm having none of it. None of it. Those people are on their own. I worked my ass off to get these people a water system, which they got. And as soon as they got it, then they didn't need me anymore. They didn't know how to begin going about getting a utility into this community. And I fought the former mayor and the former mayor pro tem, both of whom are now dead. And yes, I danced on their graves. And when we built the new city hall, I went dumpster diving for a lot of the documents that they got rid of, some of which we desperately needed in order to file with the state to become a fourth class city, which we had to be in order to qualify for the funding and, you know, the loan sources that we needed. I got them a community development block grant. They got a Department of Natural Resources grant. I got them a water tower donated. donated. And as soon as I got all that done, they don't know my name. I'm just, you know, that liberal, that nigger loving liberal that lives over on the lakefront, thinks she's all high and mighty because she lives in a house that ain't no trailer. Sorry. Sorry.
And meanwhile, little update, because I know folks have taken an interest in this. It really is, it's okay, so it's dropped to 69 degrees here in the studio with the air conditioner going.
Mm-hmm. It was humid here today.
It was right sticky here, too, and got up into the 70s.
Here, too.
And we'll stay there,
mm-hmm.
Which is kind of weird. But get this. Somebody threw a few lumps of coal on the fire a couple hours back.
For what? Barbecue?
I think the overnight low is maybe 45.
It was 59 here last night. That was our overnight low. We slept with the house open.
I mean, it's going to be time to put the air conditioner back in and get it going in the bedroom soon.
Yep.
And if nothing else, at least it'll drown out the. I that drives me crazy.
I know.
It makes an elitist out of me, doesn't it? I'm just a snob.
You are a snob.
Bob Snob.
You don't like the sound of horsepower.
I love the sound of horsepower. I just don't like it. Oh, Jesus.
It's obnoxious. I know.
Well, Carol, thank you for joining me out here on the ledge.
You are so welcome.
I'm taking
the bottle of cheap rum with me.
Damn it. So, you know, just like, you know, if anything happens out there, know that I'm not walking around with a gun, okay?
That's right.
I'm not even carrying a sword.
Me too, buddy.
But interestingly, and I'm not trying to just keep you on for the sake of keeping you on, I actually went and read the statute.
Yes.
Bunch of dumbasses.
Oh, yeah. Pandering to bigger dumbasses.
Well, now, on the one hand, it refers to firearms, but in the same sentence, it refers to the right to keep and bear arms.
Yes.
Now, we're going to probably have a court fight somewhere down the road, because not everybody in West Virginia who desperately needs to defend him or herself, you know, when the ISIS comes along to turn our Wally worlds into smoking heaps of rubble.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody's going to be able to afford a gun. Some of us might not be able to afford much more than a straight razor.
Our conceal and carry laws include knives.
Well, I think ours does too, but I don't think these dumbasses actually meant to.
No, I think our dumbasses actually meant to.
These dumbasses didn't. They was just thinking about guns and getting that big old NRA money check.
That's not a rocket launcher on my shoulder. I'm a humpback.
Yeah. Because, see, here's the fun part. You got to take all this, I forget what the phrase is, in loco parentis or in flagrante delicto. No.
Mm-hmm.
You have to take all this in pari materia.
Yeah.
And because it's the least we can do for Fat Dead Tony, We have to read the Second Amendment as constitutional originalists, which means we have to acknowledge that George Washington and even the Marquis de Lafayette, for whom this here county is named, carried swords.
Yeah.
And so that means we need to be able to carry swords.
Uh-huh.
And Tim and I have been going back and forth, but it turns out it's going to cost just way too damn much. I want to do the whole samurai get up as long as I'm not perceived to be mocking Japanese culture, but rather reveling in it. Because I think I'd probably make it maybe halfway to the Walmart to the doors of Wally World before the entire Fayette County SWAT team would be surrounding me.
No doubt. You can't just do the whole multicultural thing and go as a sumo wrestler, get the big old diaper, and just put your scabbard down in your diaper.
Well, I mean, Jesus Christ,
You're never going to make people at Walmart dress the way you are.
But I mean, it's real. What if somebody wants to carry a sword?
I
don't know. Maybe if I went with one of your more George Washington-y Marquis de Lafayette swords, maybe it'd be more acceptable. You know what? If I put on a George Washington costume and a George Washington sword, hell, I'm just a teabagger.
What if it was a man wearing a turban with a sword?
Well,
then it's
a haydlopper.
Mm-hmm. I promise you, he wouldn't make it to fruits and vegetables before he became one.
There goes tonight's toaster. But it's the truth. I mean,
yeah, you can keep the toaster. I got a whole closet full of them.
Yeah, well, you do. We'll give it away to someone desperately in need of a toaster. By the way, something to share with you before we hang up. A note from Jim.
Yes.
Subject line: one more about Nancy.
Yes.
She is a measure, not a treasure, a measure of Republican hagiography, and they will milk this event for all it's unworthy.
She's lying in state for 2 days at the Ronald Reagan Library on Wednesday and Thursday before her on all channels televised funeral on Friday at 2 p.m. Just in case, you know, you need to get to any channel anywhere.
Is SpongeBob going to be draped in black?
I have no earthly idea.
I wonder about the bass that they're going to pull out of the lake over on the Fishing Channel. I wonder if it's going to have a little piece of black electrical tape on it or something.
I have no idea, but my bet is that unless you have cable, you're not going to get to watch anything but that.
Great moments in Why I Don't Have Cable.
Exactly. Here too, buddy.
Oy vey. All right.
Here too.
Carol, have a lovely evening.
And to you.
I'm going to try.
All right. I'm going to go dig up my black dress.
crepe de chine?
Indeed.
Absolutely. All right. Just make sure it ain't make sure the hem comes at least 6 inches below your knees, because we don't want y'all trashy in mourning.
And in honor of Nancy, it's got that big ruffled like Shakespearean collar on it. Remember those that she loved to wear?
Oh, yes.
I'm telling you, I look like a clown, but it's great. Looks like a clown funeral, but I'm here.
All right, we'll see you, Carol.
Later, Gator.
Bye now. The one and only Carol Baker. 26 minutes before the hour, and yes, we still have $150 to go in fundraising for the evening. 15 at 10, 10 at 15, 1 at 150, 2 at 75. 4 at 37.50, and I can't go any further than that. Ron in the frozen north said, Bob, you just told him you're defenseless. Yeah, but that's kind of the point, isn't it? I mean, how can I be a threat to anybody? No, well, never mind. Ron continues and said, if we are to regard the Second Amendment as strict constructionalists, we should allow anyone who wants to indulge themselves to buy and carry a muzzle loader. Well, that's the thing. I mean, under the West Virginia Constitution, you can carry a muzzle loader openly and notoriously, as the law says. It's the concealing part. Now, if we want to be strict constructionists, maybe a dueling pistol of the sort that was used in the duel between, say, Alexander Hamilton and Aaron Burr. Single shot. Yeah. Ron says, I'm channeling John Belushi, the samurai chef, just trying to imagine you in a Japanese robe with a samurai sword. I think I'd look great. I'm kind of tall, broad-shouldered. I mean, because the shoulders are awesome in those samurai kind of robes. I mean, it abso-damn-lutely. But Tim tells me a real live, honest-to-goodness, no-kidding piece of folded 1,000 times Japanese steel is upwards of $100,000. Now, I thought I'd seen him, because I went looking, I thought I'd seen him online for about $6,000. I was going to start the Samurai Bob Fund, but it just doesn't look like it's going to happen. Meanwhile, Ron also notes, I would piss on Nancy Reagan's grave, but when I got out of the military, I swore I'd never stand in line again. He'll be here all night. Don't try the veal. No, I was just sitting around thinking. I'm prone to doing that, unfortunately. I was sitting around thinking the other day, and I got to thinking about climate change and what we're doing to the planet that does not belong to us, but belongs to the next seven generations. At least about five of which, maybe four, are ungotten and at least some of us are thinking about them. And I realized that by the time they get to be adults and get on up there about my age, they're going to be so pissed off at the boomers that they're going to piss on our graves so much we'll be lucky if we don't float out to sea. All this silly horse shit about, well, you know, we can frack if we've got proper regulations. Bullshit. No, you can't. We've had all kinds of proper regulations in Appalachia since 1977, the Surface Mine Control and Reclamation Act. It didn't stop those 27 families' wells from being poisoned, did it? No. And that was something that my friends in the Northwoods figured out up in Wisconsin, back when we were talking about what the renegade hillbilly wanted to do to them. And I said, you know, you only get one chance to get this right. Because after they start the blasting, after they start the gouging, after they start the extracting, after the trucks start rolling, after the dust starts filling the air, after the children start breathing it, after the water turns foul, you can't put that genie back in the bottle. There's only one way to do fracking, and that is to not do fracking. There's only one way to do mountaintop removal, and that's to not do mountaintop removal. But, you know, that ship has sailed, and we just have to stop it. Because they're still killing us. But I stand by my theory. Well, Mushu the talk radio cat has decided to come and visit. Hello, baby. I stand by my theory that there's poison and then there's poison. There's poison in Flint, and then there's poison in Appalachia. There's poison in Flint, and then there's poison in Perry County, Alabama. There's poison in privileged communities, and then there's, you know, the rest of us. I think it would be great if it could all be treated equally, but it's not going to be. Because the poisoning in Flint, I mean, once you get past the industrial crimes that allowed the Flint River to be turned into the Flint River, the poisoning of Flint was politics. The poisoning of Flint was Alec. The poisoning of Flint was the Koch brothers. The poisoning of Flint was conservative Republican ideology.
In Flint, we found out that conservative Republican ideology really can make you less intelligent. But the poisoning in Appalachia isn't the same. The poisoning in Appalachia has a cui bono component to it. The poisoning in Flint was just a matter of Republicans putting into practice their long-held belief that government's just bad and the free market can solve all problems, and anything that inures to the benefit of poor people probably needs to be done away with. But the poisoning of Appalachia is an entirely different problem. The poisoning of Appalachia is something that has been very beneficial to the various and sundry CEOs and board members and corporate officers of Arch and Peabody and Massey and Alpha and Patriot and Consol. And because of the way that that business works, that means it has also been very financially remunerative to the people who fund the poisoning of Appalachia. And that's your Goldman Sachs. And that's your Citibank. And your Bank of America. And your Deutsche Bank. And your Credit Agricole. And your UBS. And your Bank of Scotland. In other words, that's that's benefits that have accrued to the people who in turn have given some of the money that they have derived from poisoning Appalachia to one of the two Democratic candidates for President of the United States. So that's why here in Appalachia we won't sit around waiting for our town hall. We won't sit around waiting for our debate. We won't sit around waiting for a candidate to come here and go up a holler and be conspicuously photographed weeping for what's been done to us. Because we know better. Weeping isn't something you do for Appalachia. Reaping is what you do with the profits you have liquidated out of flesh and bone, blood and gristle of Appalachia. Now, we'll not be having any hand-wringing in Appalachia. Because as Ron points out, and he knows as well as anybody, the poisoning of Appalachia is deliberate for the greater good of all those people who don't live in Appalachia. And I hope, regardless of which candidate you support, I hope you're okay with me not being okay
with all the tens of thousands and hundreds of thousands and millions of dollars that go in to campaign accounts and PACs from the people who benefit from the wholesale slaughter. Slow moving, mind you, but wholesale nonetheless, of Appalachia. I'm just a little ray of sunshine this evening. I apologize. Maybe that's why fundraising's off $150 for the evening. I don't know. But let's make no mistake. It's not like the other side isn't worse. They are. Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, booger-eating anointed future king of America, well, he's gotten $25 million from fossil fuel companies. Yeah. ~57% of that $25 million came from folks in the oil and gas industry. What does that mean about the other 43%? Well, some portion of that is some young Appalachian child's mind. Some portion of that is the years a mother in Appalachia will not have with her children. Thanks, Ted. By the way, a quick little giggle before I run over to the phones just to wrap things up. Yeah, you've seen that two-color logo for Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America. It says, trust Ted, trusted. Only Ted is one color and trust is another. Guess what trust stands for? Transrectal ultrasound. Man, I think the goddess of irony has started abusing meth and Red Bull because she's not going to sleep until the second week of November. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, good evening.
Good evening.
This is Flavio from Wisconsin. I just wanted to chime in and just say, wow, did you hear about this? This is great. This is really great. Now they're accusing Bernie of being a sexist.
Oh, yeah, because...
Misogynist. And...
The kidnapper of the Lindbergh baby?
Drum roll, please. A racist. They're calling him a racist because he used the word ghetto.
Well, let's be careful about using that word, they. Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton's rabid partisans are doing that. And that includes the for-profit media. Love you.
They use the word ghetto. He's Jewish.
I guess that kind of evaded notice. That's it's a Yiddish word, isn't it? You're the knower of lots of languages, isn't that Yiddish?
Actually, it's Italian, but
ghetto is Italian.
Yeah.
Huh.
Ghetto is an Italian word. Usually means when people are of a different ethnicity are cornered in different parts of a city, and slum, you know, it's like a slum.
Right, hence the phrase, the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising.
Right.
Now, would Hillary's partisans have us believe that the Warsaw Ghetto was populated with people of color?
I guess so.
I mean, that's the argument they're making, isn't it?
Yeah, you can't use that word. That would make him a racist. And yet we talk about food ghettos, you know, where there are no supermarkets anywhere around and all they got is the mini marts, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Those are, you know, and the payday loan places. And you tell me, you ever been to Milwaukee? Probably.
No.
Well, it's just like that. Certain parts of the city are beautiful, and other parts of the city, all you got is the mini marts, no supermarkets for miles around, and ghetto. That, you know?
Yeah, I'm being told by Lottie in the chat room, the English word ghetto comes from the Jewish area of Venice, the Venetian ghetto in Canareggio.
Correct.
No agreement among etymologists about the origins of the Venetian language term. One linguist proposes a possible connection with German gasse, Swedish gata, Gothic gatwo, all meaning street.
Yeah, gata is street in Swedish.
Okay.
But yeah, I guess all is fair in love and war, huh?
Well, all's fair in faux victimization.
Yeah. I was just taken aback because I was reading several entries in Google News.
Yeah.
I just Googled Sanders. Sexism, misogyny, just. And these are purportedly left-wing sites, Mediaite, Think Progress, whatever. And I'm thinking, come on, are you crazy?
When you ask two older white Americans, Flavio, about race in America, and in particular, this particular question was, what are your racial blind spots? Or what is your racial blind spot? There's no way that you're going to get a good answer out of that. That question was designed to elicit awkward answers because they are, by virtue of fact, going to be awkward because they're being proffered by people who don't have a clue because they have lived inside a privilege bubble.
Correct. And I think he said as much, didn't he?
I think he did. And I mean, for my part, yeah, I was born and raised in the South. And I was born and raised by two parents who wanted nothing to do with that hateful epithet, and raised me to, quote, be better than that.
Mm-hmm.
But it was still Alabama, Flavio. And I heard it and heard it and heard it. And jokes and jokes and jokes. And they're all, you know, they're all told out on the playground. Okay, story. I'll make it quick because it's your nickel, not mine. My first day of first grade, we didn't have kindergarten back then. My first day of first grade, I learned two new words, having more or less left my home for the first time in the sheltering embrace of my parents' roof. On my first day of first grade in Alabama, I learned two new words. One was Yankee, and the other was nigger.
Mm-hmm.
I was called a Yankee. A little girl who lived one street over from me was called the other word.
Mm-hmm.
And at the tender age of 6 years old, I really didn't know what either one meant.
No, you don't.
And so I went home and asked Mama. And she was not happy. And she said, both of those are words that are used by ignorant people, and you are not going to be an ignorant person, and you are never going to use those words. Well, I've gone on to use Yankee. And I use the other one when the other one, when there's no getting around it.
No.
You know, when you're reporting on somebody who, you know, leaves, you know, die written on a bill, spray painted on a building. But I mean, that was my reality. You can't not know these things in America. And they can't not affect you if you're white. And God knows, if you're black, it's not a matter of being affected, if I understand correctly. It's a matter of being hurt and harmed, maimed and killed. But even I acknowledge that my answer is going to be insufficient and probably awkward.
So's mine.
And so all we can do is pledge to try to erase it, try to eradicate it, try to eventually get to finally one place in this country where it doesn't happen anymore. And ultimately the question then becomes, Flavio, and you're a man of reason, is that ever even possible in the United States, or is this our blood curse?
That's a very good question, and that applies, I mean, to the privileged, you know, in the United States or in Brazil. Brazil, incidentally, had slavery until 1888, long after your Civil War was over. So we live with that blood curse as well down there, and we don't even acknowledge it. We don't even, you know, at least here, they're...
Well, I mean, look, we just passed Alamo Day not too long back, Flavio, and that's a day when Americans, a terrorist group of Americans, rebelled against the civil authority of Mexico because the Americans wanted to keep slaves in a country that had abolished slavery. That's what the Alamo was all about. But we got to get out of here. It's time. It's time for Malloy, so I got to shut it all down.
You have a good night.
Thanks, Flavio.
I hope you're feeling better.
Some, yes. Getting there. Thank you.
All right.
Bye now. And yeah, really, time to get out of here. Thanks, everybody. Thanks very kindly. We'll start the program with a $350 fundraising goal tomorrow, unless something happens overnight. Good night, y'all.